All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, October 27th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're going to be breaking down a Friday night in the NBA, the National Basketball Association for FanDuel and DraftKings. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, head over to the site now. You can get a free 3-day trial to our subscription package. It's going to cover you for NBA and NFL as well while those are going on. All set to go free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after. We cover everything under one package. We don't section it off by sport or provider or anything like that. If we have it, you get it. Go over into the chat room as well. Just say, hey, is it worth it? Is NBA worth it this year? You'll get a resounding yes from our users where NBA.
You might get a heck yes, Doug.
Ooh, and they might even. I've tried to block out a lot of the bad words you can say, but someone might sneak something in to be even more resoundingly enthusiastic about the NBA product. Coming off a really, really great night, tell me, is it better? Which is the better way to live life? I want to know. So, put in lineups last night.
Okay.
And I'm watching basketball, and then around like 10:30, I just kind of the lineups were doing really, really well. Around 10:30, I go to sleep. Wake up, see that I cashed like ninth in one of the DraftKings tournaments for about $1,500, right?
Okay.
So I'm feeling really good, you know, and overall the night's going well. That was just like the one specific number on that one tournament, right? And then I get a text from my brother-in-law says, oh, that was a hell of a stack correction, huh? And I was like, what? He's like, you got stack corrected out of like four grand after the thing locked. And I was like, because I guess he had been just like watching, he was in that same tournament and saw like my name up near the leaderboard. Better way to live life, to know it and see it, or to just have never known? Like, what do you think would have been the better? Like, I like to be accurate.
Question? Isn't it obviously to never have known, right? I mean, you get a better story. You get story equity out of this. So I guess there is that consideration. Like, yeah. Now you get to bring up and humble brag about your nice performance last night.
It's not humble brag. I'm bragging. This NBA system's good. I'm not humble bragging about it.
Yeah, well, and you get to humbly brag about your thing in the context of sharing a story about a stat correction. So, yeah, I think you got the best of both worlds, Doug. I think you weren't going to get the money anyway because the stat was incorrect. So nothing you could do about that. I think watching it in real time is always more painful for me too. Either way, like I've had those nights too where you go to bed and wake up to like a third place and you're like, whoa. Because normally if you know that you have that kind of sweat and play, you just stay up and sweat it, you know? Right. So like, but it's like typically this will happen if you have, I don't know, a bunch of guys going late, or maybe like you were doing well early and you have one more guy, but you assume everyone else is going to go off. You know, there are reasons why you just have no idea that you're going to get there. Maybe I just have tons of lineups and lose track or whatever, but I always like waking up the next day. I don't really enjoy sweating it out. Unless you come in exactly first place, it's never fun, in my opinion. So
yeah, it was like a 5-point difference between like 1,000 and 50,000 or something like that. I'll actually chopped it up a couple of different ways. But I knew when I had gone to bed, I knew that some lineups had a chance just because we just had some like kind of offbeat plays. Anyways, a lot to get into today for NBA. I have some things that I am dying to complain about just in terms of like narrative stuff, but we can go kind of, those will maybe just come up in context as we go along here. Smaller Friday slate here. Usually NBA usually see around 10 games on a Friday night. Only have 7 tonight. I think that's had something to do with there were a few more Thursday games yesterday than there are usually. So not usually Friday, you know, usually Wednesdays and Fridays are the big nights for basketball, and this one is just a little bit smaller, but still plenty of value to be had, I think, on both sites. Let's start with San Antonio and Orlando. I think Elfrid Payton is still banged up here. I take that back, I maybe missed the injury note on him. Let's talk about San Antonio first, and I'll look up the injury note about Payton.
Rolled
San
out.
Antonio's definitely gonna be is he okay? So San Antonio is still gonna be without Kawhi. They played some of their bigger guys, by bigger guys I mean specifically Aldridge,
taller
guys. Minutes here. And then, well, actually, yeah, but Gasol hasn't even really been
heavier
playing
guys
as much. How do you see San Antonio against a very defensively compromised Magic team? Even without Kawhi, the minutes have sort of kind of just been spread out in a very Spursy sort of way. Anything you like on really San Antonio?
I mean, there's always going to be stuff that's tolerable. You know, I think Aldridge has been really good this season. I mean, he's up at his highest prices since his Portland days, and he's been basically paying it. You know, he's good against a slow Miami team, not so great against Toronto, but excellent against Chicago, good against Minnesota. So even at 9,000, no Kawhi, no really other great offensive options here, I think you can absolutely consider him. You know, you like it being in Orlando, theoretically helping to keep the game close. While Gordon and Vooch are both good offensive players, I don't think they pose a lot of threat to him on the defensive end. So I think Aldridge is a very strong consider for me. After that, it's just kind of chopped up too many ways, I think. I think, you know, Anderson, we've gone down this road a number of times for much cheaper than 5,000 and been only intermittently pleased. He had a good game against Miami. It's, you know, it's a type of thing where on a relatively small, I guess, Friday slate, you can see it. Like, if he were in lineups, I wouldn't, as long as the minutes were correct, I wouldn't run screaming from it. But after that, it's just kind of like, you know, just all the guys you're always going to think about on the Spurs. Danny Green, you know, been kind of good, but has those issues of playing a lot of minutes sometimes and not seeing the usage. And like you mentioned, Pau, just kind of getting Pau-ish minutes, 19, 22, stuff like that. So overall, a lot to kind of like about the Spurs. I don't know that there's much to like love necessarily, but.
No, I think I'm pretty much off him. And then Orlando going the other way. Vucevic has a really nice DraftKings price at 6,900. I think that strikes me as low. I could see, even in not an ideal matchup against this team, him kind of getting there on that price, where sub 7,000 for centers in general are usually priced lower on DraftKings, and sub 7,000 for him, a guy that definitely has double-double upside, which you're also kind of shooting for on DraftKings, especially out of your center. You kind of need to hit that double-double to make sure you get the extra bonus points. So I don't mind going there on him. I'm not that interested on the rest of the team where the prices have come up. They're playing really weird minutes on Ross and Simmons. They kind of play matchups on those two guys. Gordon obviously coming off his best game of the
year. Yeah, I was going to ask you about him. Do you think people try to rock him today?
I wouldn't. The price has come up, 8,500. That game... You got to take these things for what it's worth. He played Brooklyn in this matchup. Brooklyn is the absolute best matchup you can ever have. Yep. They still are the best matchup you can have fantasy-wise. So you can't really look at his 60-point performance and say that is going to be something that he's going to recreate. He's just not this kind of scorer. He was lights out from downtown. He was getting to the rack over and over. It was just that that's more of a Brooklyn thing than an Aaron Gordon thing. I'm not paying 8,500 for him on FanDuel in this matchup. So sure. Vucevic, and that's kind of be it for me. Houston goes into Charlotte. Houston coming off the game against Philly, where they really had to shorten their rotations a lot because of injury. They still have the same injury concerns again as well. Ariza is still out. Nene is still not going to play. This is a slower Charlotte's team. I'm actually a little surprised by the line in this game. Houston not for a ton of implied points for an offense that's usually that can be pretty high powered. So I guess my question here is, where do we stand on guys like Harden, Gordon? They're playing tons of minutes and they get tons of usage without the rest of the guys. And I'm a little spooked by where Vegas is coming in on the line.
Yeah, I think Gordon's kind of interesting. I think he's another one that our model and many models are probably still going off of last year's assumptions. And he's just been kind of a different player this season. Like 24 points or more in four of his first five games is not something you ever would have expected out of him, regardless of who the point guard was. And so the fact that he's seeing that level of usage really does mean something to me. I mean, he's expensive now. You're paying for it almost and then some at 7,100. But it's been pretty consistent production, you know, rebounding the position relatively well, scoring a lot, even getting involved in the passing game. No defensive stats, so he's still Eric Gordon. He's not like an Eric Gordon clone or something that actually does play basketball differently. So I think it's somewhat sustainable to me, but again, expensive. And we touched on it with Harden. Like, I think Harden at this price is very matchup dependent. We played him somewhat grudgingly against Philly, and he was good, but not great. You know, 54 points against Philly on 11.5 salary is just not excellent. You know, if cash games this season have been over 300 almost every night, and that is not the kind of price that pays off for you in that instance. So maybe if there are excellent punt plays, he's a guy you can think about, but definitely not anyone you need to prioritize.
Yeah, no, I think people are gonna want to jam some of these guys into lineups just because their offense does seem concentrated around those two guys. The fact that Gordon matched Harden's total number of shots in the win.
I like Gordon better than Harden. I should be clear. Yeah, I think.
Well, the fact that the fact that his usage was right in line with Harden, or not his usage counts some other things as well. This is the number of shots were right in line with Harden. I find it to be a little bit surprising. I do think the price has probably gotten there. 78. Oh, excuse me. No, he's not. He's 7,100 on FanDuel. It's probably a little too expensive, especially for where their implied total is coming in. I do like some of the other role players here. We played Ryan Anderson, not begrudgingly. I really like that Anderson play against Philly the other night, and it worked out. I think he's going to see similar amount of minutes. Luke Mbamute, also another guy that saw a lot of minutes because their rotations have just gotten a lot shorter. Like, when you lose Ariza and Nene, you just are kind of really behind the eight ball. And then Capella was, a complete beast fronting up against Embiid. Where do you see some of the role players coming in here? It seems like Capella's going to need to play minutes. Like, Dwight's been playing minutes on the other side. Where do you see some of those secondary options for Houston?
Yeah, I like Capella's not priced like a secondary option anymore. That's the big issue here. He's 7,700 on FanDuel. That's really expensive for a guy whose highest total minutes on the season is 3,100. And on a per-minute basis, he's just not Joel Embiid. You know, he had the 20-rebound game against Philly notwithstanding. Like, he doesn't really do enough on the offensive end for me to want to sustain a price like this. So it's really hard for me to imagine playing him at that price point.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you on the Capella piece. I think I can, specifically for FanDuel, we'll almost definitely be playing Anderson here. Or it'll
yeah,
be
Anderson and Bob Mute, both of those guys are just kind of like, whatever, you know, if it happens, right. It happens. I wasn't excited about them when we played them last time. It was fine. I won't be excited if we have to play them again, and I imagine it will just be fine again. Like, well, how about Kaminsky, though? Kaminsky in the same price range in the same game. He's been pretty good this season. Do you have any thoughts on him?
Yeah, it comes off the bench. I really want to avoid playing guys off the bench. Just because really anything more than like a three-game slate where you're just completely stuck on a guy to play, and it usually becomes like the Lou Williams types or something like that, like the guys that can kind of come in or into the offense. The bench players, I get that he's been good. They have been a little bit banged up, you know, not having
been pretty consistent, too.
Say it again?
The minutes have been pretty consistent too.
And so is the performance. No kid Gilchrist hasn't been there. You know, it's weird. They do seem to be transitioning away from Marvin Williams. Marvin Williams was a guy who they would play him and Kaminsky together at times last season. That's definitely not happening now. And Marvin Williams' numbers have kind of bottomed out. So if you think that like that's going to be just a consistent kind of thing, my concern would be I think there could be games where Williams like kind of gets hot from three, and they don't want to just rotate him out as quickly as they have in the past. And I think that Kaminsky would stand to just see minutes buzz. And look, we just learned so many times that the guys whose minutes are the least consistent are the bench guys, because there's so many scenarios that go wrong for them. There's way less things that go right for them than wrong for them. So
that's a good point. And it's easy to hand wave away, like, you know, the opening game against Detroit, 23 minutes, goes down to 27 minutes against Denver. I think it's easy to start making excuses. But now you're talking about half the games on the season so far where he wouldn't have been worth it. Or you wouldn't have played him based on his opportunity. Sure, he ran hot from the field against Denver and still paid this price pretty easily, but it's in the a lot has to go right category, right? Which kind of makes him a big tournament target for me.
Yep, and I do like Dwight in this matchup. I think they're going to want to. I think they've been wanting to play him as many minutes as possible. I know he only played 26 against Denver, though. I believe that was some foul trouble was wrapped in there, and they played him during crunch time too. So I'm encouraging
my team board to that game too. It was a blowout.
He's been
they were really far ahead, and he still came back in. The rebounding has been through the roof. 18 rebounds a game this season. The guy's an animal.
Yeah, no, he's the rebounding with, especially with Zeller not there. Like, he's their big body. They needed to play him more. Yeah, good call. I think it was a combo deal of the blowout, and he had four personal fouls at some point. And so I think that you know there's a scenario here where we see 33 minutes out of Dwight. 15 to 19 rebounds is completely in play, especially against a faster paced team in Houston. And so I think it feels weird to pay these kind of prices on Dwight, because I'm still just kind of remembering the time in Atlanta where he was just a forgotten guy. Like, it just wasn't really working out the way Atlanta was playing.
Weird.
In terms of fantasy production, look, the Charlotte's not a good team, so don't get me wrong. I'm not conflating fantasy production with actual like good team production. It's just people get really confused about that when they watch basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, it can really seem like players who are not good are good because they put up fantasy stats, and the list is seemingly endless with guys who appeared on the scene for a brief time and were just fantasy darlings, and then now simply can't even get a gig, right? Like, they can't even, like, they're just not even on a team. Terrence Jones, like, comes to mind, right? Like, this guy, sure. If you gave Terrence Jones 30 minutes, the guy could score 30 fantasy points, like,
probably
really,
still
really
would be.
Easily. Yeah. Right. But there's a reason these guys aren't on a team, so I don't want to confuse actual good basketball with fantasy basketball. But paying $8,000 for Dwight, I think I can do it on FanDuel. The rebounding is so ridiculous. DraftKings, too. Like, the double-double thing is, if he's going to rebound like this, then double-doubles are going to be, he's going to get that bonus just nearly every
single
game.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with Dwight, I think. Because actually, it's interesting. Like, he's not running hot from the field. He's shooting basically the exact same number of shots and making the exact same number as he has in each of the last three seasons. Like, 5.2 on 8.5 is like almost lock stock has been the last couple of years. And, you know, the free throws, whatever, they're always going to be where they are. But what you really love to see on him is kind of the effort and hustle stats. And, you know, for him, the way that shakes out is rebounds, blocks, and steals. And all of those numbers are in a good direction for him this season. And so I don't think he ends the season at 18 rebounds a game, but he doesn't need to on these prices because, again, he's also adding opportunity. Playing more minutes per game is the most significant number you want to look at for a guy who generates so much value simply by being on the court and taking balls off the glass. So, yeah, I still like Dwight going forward on this price, although it's more like fair and less exciting.
Correct. And that's a great point about just like Dwight. There are some guys that you need to have like sort of you need
mentally
you need
to checked have to, in, man.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The mentally checked in part is really important for guys like him, Whiteside, some of these guys. They just need you need to make sure that they're just kind of in and wanting to play the game. And I think actually just getting huge rebound numbers for him is like the thing that keeps him engaged, or is one thing that, because he's a stat guy. Like, he just wants to put up stats. He wants to be considered in that like elite center territory. And getting 19 rebounds a game, I think, is actually crazily enough, I do think that's a motivation for him. So yep, not all in on Dwight, but really like the scenario here. I think there are scenarios where you can see a high upside Kemba Walker games, just because Houston doesn't have much in the way of half court defense against guards, though Kemba has kind of struggled at times this season. All right, moving on. Denver and Atlanta. Interesting to get your thoughts here on Denver. They're -7 favorites going into Atlanta. Atlanta looks really damn bad. I think we knew this was going to be the case. They just really don't have any guys. It looks like they're going to get Dennis Schroeder back, so they at least have him, which really isn't saying much because the rest of the team stinks. But Denver, so Denver signs Millsap in the offseason, and the rest of the team is pretty much the same. But all of a sudden now, they're playing very slow. They're not really playing very well. I just don't know. It's really hard to make what to know to make a Denver, because we're getting really low prices on guys like Millsap, Jokic, really across the board. Like, every single one of their starters. It seems like if we could make a fair assessment of like what their offense was going to be, every single one of these guys would strike me as a value. And yet they've looked really bad as a team and they've played slow. I just don't know what to make of Denver.
Yeah, I think there's another pretty key thing that's changed about Denver, and that's the point guard play. So yep. Moutier goes last season from, you know, kind of being a starter. Basically, Moutier, you don't really see this very often, but the minutes for him in 2015, 30, last year, 25, this year, 20. And I think he turns the ball over a ton. He's just kind of like, shoots terribly, shoots too much. You know, he's not a good basketball player, so I understand why they're playing him less. But I think he was driving some of the pace there. And I think Murray, you know, he's not really... Like, he's just as happy to sit and hang loose in the half-court offense and shoot threes and, like, do whatever else. And so you look at the rest of their team, like, Chandler's old. Jokic isn't exactly an up-and-down guy. Like, he's happy to just bang it out in the paint in a half-court set, too. So I think we could definitely, like, this play style almost, and Millsap as well. Like, all these guys don't really lend themselves to the up-and-down style of game that they had sort of been playing. And I think given that, I think this pace going forward is probably more of what we want to expect. And so while a lot of the prices look cheap compared to what they've been in the past, it could just be that this is a fair price based on the current pace. And I think we just need to see them actually figure it out. And can we have one person on the team pay their price before we want to play these guys? Like, it's really like two a man. If you look at all of these guys, it's like 4X, 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 4X. It's crazy to see the lack of production that's come through here so far.
I think that's pacing issues.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. Right. But I think that just makes Denver as a whole sort of a wait and see until it all normalizes.
Because we are getting it right. And this is, again, Atlanta's a good matchup here because they stink at defense. And
they play fast.
Right, exactly. And so this is going to be an interesting spot because our system is going to draw a little bit on some of our projections, which were not completely made up because this team is, I say completely made up, because like some preseason projections that you're going to run are
like Oklahoma City. Exactly. What are you supposed to do?
Exactly. You're making complete guesses about how they're going to go. It's not completely the case here for Denver, though I know that we're getting the volume issues are a real concern. So I do think that there's a scenario where the game stays close and they play their starters up near the 30-minute mark, up in the mid-30s mark, and you're going to get extreme value on them, and I just don't know if I'm going to be able to completely pull the trigger. Atlanta side, I mean, they're going to get Schroeder back. There were some interesting guys here when he wasn't around, mostly because they had Bazemore kind of running the secondary ball handling stuff, Malcolm Delaney, I don't know, Prince played a lot of minutes and then really didn't play at all last night. Anything you like here on Atlanta side?
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on some of them. I think Baze is still probably pretty interesting, just because he's been at least producing from a fantasy perspective. I don't know that the overlap between what he does and what Schroeder does is enough to really hurt him. Obviously, like guys like Delaney, who are already struggling to produce on 35 minutes, go totally off the table. I think around the rest of the team, you just have more uncertainty. You know, Ilyasova is out. That, I guess, makes more space for Luke Babbitt, but he really hasn't been playing well or playing a lot of minutes. And then the center position, you know, Dedmon's been getting a lot of playing time this season, also hasn't really been producing a whole hell of a lot. So, and the minutes have been pretty erratic. Muscala's been getting some playing time, but doing so mostly off the bench. But, you know, in terms of big tournaments, the guy paid 11x on this price against Chicago.
He started last night. So, like, if he were to continue to start, I think that I would do it. But, you know, he was...
Oh, yeah, I think so. I didn't even realize that. I didn't follow last night because I was traveling.
But, yeah,
if he started, that's an interesting...
Well, the only problem with that is, though, he started the game before and played 23 minutes. Like, I get worried about... Like, his numbers are not...
He's 3,300, though. Like, no, on draft, he can play 25 minutes and pay this price.
He could be a popular play, for sure. If he were to start again, I think that I'd be fine doing it. It's a little weird. I don't want to give him 30 minutes of expectation because, again, we saw one game before that was kind of close where he just did not play, and they played matchups. They played Collins more off the bench, and then went a little bit smaller. So that's my only reservation with Muscala, though. That being said, he was in that lineup that I was speaking about on DraftKings earlier, that kind of like came close to the top. He was a clear huge upside play last night. So keep an ear out for the Muscala starting where it ends up with Ilyasova. Moving into Brooklyn and New York. Brooklyn's still going to be without D'Angelo Russell going into tonight, coming off. I cannot believe they beat the Cavs the other night. Cavs aren't playing today, so I'll save my Cavs rant for a time when they're actually playing. But I think you sent me a text during that game that just said something like, Cavs should be regulated, right? Like, it was just like,
relegated.
Relegated, sorry.
Not regulated, Doug. Relegated.
Sorry, yes. Relegated.
Kick him out. Kick him out. I think it's not the players. Like, they should be just redistributed to other teams probably, but to finally have found the magic formula that allows you to lose games like this with LeBron James on your team, or to play close games against terrible teams like Brooklyn, like, great job, everyone. You've done what no one else had ever been able to figure out how to do, which is to make LeBron James and a team that he's on look human.
Yeah, so, and I
good job, everyone.
Not to pat myself on the back here, I said this very beginning of the season, that the Cavs were not a good team, and the way they were made up, it was going to lend themselves to games like this where they were going to be susceptible to teams, especially running hot from three, because they just can't make up some of the scoring, and that was the case with Brooklyn. So, anyway, Cavs don't play tonight. Brooklyn does. Without Russell, they're a feisty team, and we did see some minutes from some of their starters, which usually doesn't happen, but when you're missing a guy like D'Angelo, I guess, and now Jeremy Lin, their backcourt, they're completely decimated in the backcourt in terms of like what they came in to the season with. Hollis Jefferson played a lot of minutes. We saw Dinwiddie play pretty well. How do you like them against a New York team which has its own significant issues, at least on the defensive end?
Yeah, I really like Dinwiddie. I think, you know, he actually got stat corrected out of a reasonable GPP performance from him, too. But 38 fantasy points on 31 minutes against Cleveland in a not plus matchup. You know, the fact that he can go out there, he's doing it in all facets of the game, distributing, he's scoring, still relatively cheap. You know, you're not getting him for sub 4,000 anymore. But in a matchup against New York, it probably doesn't matter. You know, like, I think that level of opportunity, like, still the Nets are always going to be holding people down and keeping people around that 30 minute. I think you compared it to hockey line changes. I think that's very apt to describing their approach to things. But yeah, I really like Dinwiddie as a distributor and a scorer as well. I think LeVert's kind of interesting. I'm curious to get your thoughts on him. I wonder if Dinwiddie being the primary ball handler is taking some of the wind out of his sails for whatever reason, because he goes from back-to-back games scoring 30-plus fantasy points, kind of disappearing in a game that his team is actually doing really well against Cleveland. The minutes were still there, but do you think he's just too risky now in that $5,800 price range?
I still like going back to him. I still think I think he still shot a ton that game. Like, he had his most shots of the season, second most shots of the season against Cleveland. They just didn't fall. Like, he shot 5 for 14, sure. And specifically the thing that killed him was he went 0-for-5 from 3, right?
Do you think he missed because he was extra nervous because Russell wasn't out there?
It could be. Maybe just into the shots. Okay. But he's not a good three-point shooter this year. He's only shooting 14%. Now, that's not going to last, right? He's a better three-point shooter than this. And I think that I like buying on guys like this when there's something clear that kind of happened the game before. Took a lot of shots, just didn't hit any from three. I think the pace-up is still going to help him in this game. Or it's not even the pace-up. The defensive, the lack of defense on the New York side of the ball. And I think that he was a pretty popular play last time. And I think when people get burned without really maybe understanding some of the context behind like what happened, I think that he makes for even more of an interesting play. Sean Kilpatrick probably cut in a little bit to his ball handling stuff as well. Like, they brought Kilpatrick back, didn't play a ton, but 10 minutes even from him is going to cut into a little bit of what LeVert does. But I think the three guys I'm mostly targeting here, Dinwiddie, LeVert, and Ronnie Hollis Jefferson, and those are and Jefferson's too. Even it's crazy, man. It's the $5,800 price tag on $6,400. I was looking at LeVert. $6,400 on FanDuel is still kind of in play for me for Jefferson, Hollis Jefferson on at power forward. That's a pretty weak position. So I get a little worried because these guys don't play 35 minutes regularly, but Jefferson could still be that guy. New York side of the ball, All right, so the rubber's going to meet the road here on Tim Hardaway.
Should we talk about it finally, Doug? Should we just get it off? I know you've been thinking about this for the whole podcast.
I've been thinking about it since I saw, since two games ago when I knew he was going to play, when he was, they were going to play Brooklyn in the next game. So Tim Hardaway Jr. has been, I mean, other levels of awful to start this season, right? He's shooting 24% Correct. From the field. He's shooting 22% from three. He's not played some minutes. He's been in a little bit of foul trouble at times. It has been as bad a start to the season as you can hope to have for a guy who, I'm going to make the joke, they signed him in the offseason. So if you, whatever you want to say about whether that was a good signing or not, he's just, he was a guy that they actually paid money to get. He is so cheap on FanDuel right now. He is $4,600 against the, or not even arguably, against the very best defensive matchup you can have in DFS, right? Like in terms of just fantasy expectation on that player side. For me, it is not even close to any. It's the easiest decision of all time to play Hardaway. And I can already, people are starting, like Casey's texting me this morning complaining about it. I can see people in chat complaining about it. And I just want to freaking lose my mind because this is exact. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, can we just wait one game? No, you wait zero games for this. Like, this is where I'll play this on this price from now. It's like, you know, oh, can we just wait till the stock goes up a little bit until then? Can we wait till Bitcoin goes up a little bit and then we start buying it? No, 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 no.
You certainly like, could.
Oh, you yeah, could.
That's a thing you can do.
You could, and it would make no sense. Because here's the other thing, and I'm going to let you talk in a second, but I'm going to filibuster this for one more minute.
Thank you so much.
The things that you love. Still going to play 30 minutes as long as the game stays close. It's almost impossible to imagine the Nets blowing a team, like completely blowing a team out. The way they play, they would need to run ridiculously hot from three to be able to. They can do it, but it's very, very unlikely, right? So the plan for him is to play minutes, right? They got blown out last game, so I only played 28. He's still shooting 14 times a game this year. 12 times a game this year, 7 three-point attempts a game. If you think that he's going to continue to be like the worst shooting of probably his entire life, then he's a bad play. Otherwise, this is the easiest play of all time. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. I think there's so much value that comes from this exact situation, this exact time of year. And it's not the type of play you ever have access to later in the season. I also think if things are clicking for him, there's minutes upside as well. We've seen the Knicks go to guys for big time minutes in similar situations to Hardaway's in the past. And I think for whatever reason, it hasn't clicked so far. It simply can't last forever. Basketball just doesn't really work that way. I think a lot of people, right. You know, you want to talk about slumps, you want to talk about guys being in their own head, whatever. I'm sure that can happen from time to time, but just go look at any player's field goal percentage from year to year, and you'll see basically every player just shoots exactly the same every year. Like, there's just so many reps. There's not a lot of variance in shooting a basketball from different spots on the court relative to other sports. Like, it just is going to come back. Really, the only external risk to Hardaway in my mind is losing playing time because the team is annoyed, but it's just really hard to do that.
That's
especially
not
in
happen.
This New York on New York matchup. I agree with you. All I'm saying is that if there's a risk, that's what it is, because you know Courtney Lee is still there. Lee outplayed him last minute game. You know, he played 35 minutes. You can argue that Lee's more of a small forward, but he's not a scorer, right? And they got Hardaway specifically to score. So I think Hardaway goes out, he probably shoots his regular percentage, because that's what else should you expect him to do. And if he does that, he'll stay on the court for 35 minutes. And I think he'll have an excellent game. And I think he'll just be 5,500 within a week. That's my projection.
My guarantee is that you see anyone with like knowledge of basketball, like knowledge of DFS basketball, and I'm talking like, you know, top level pro guys that are doing this like really consistently, every single one of them is going to play him tonight, because they're not going to, I'm guaranteed that those guys guaranteed. That understand it, like you and I and these other people, like do not get influenced by four games where you're just shooting. Like, you look at Tim Hardaway's shooting percentage for his career, 43%, 40%, 43%, 45%, 24% this year. Which one's the outlier? Like, does he all of a sudden stink at shooting now? No. He's been unlucky. He's had some bad matchups. He's had some foul trouble. And he just started off the season poorly. So anyway, that's my Tim Hardaway thing. I get very annoyed when people don't understand this. It's beating my head against the wall to try to explain this over and over and over to people that don't understand, and it's just going to be – it comes with the territory. Other guys here, I really think pretty much all the Knicks are in play. Kristaps is in play.
Yeah.
He's the minutes on him have been great. Fantastic matchup. Ramon Sessions, I think, is still fine for his price. The center position for them is just too wonky, I think, to go completely there, and Courtney Lee doesn't shoot enough. But
yeah, the Nets play fast, play bad. You can stack guys against them every game, pretty much.
Every single game, and you just take the guys who score, and they're going to play minutes against the Nets, and it's a winning formula, and there's no difference here. And you actually get just lucky because you're able to buy a little bit lower on some of the Knicks guys. All right, I'm done.
All right, good. Well, I'm going to talk about a sponsor then, don't forget, because we only have three more games left. So I'll talk about No Halftime. No Halftime is a great app that you can go download right now. You can use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50. And No Halftime is really cool because it's a perfect app for settling these little arguments that you get in with your friends about which player is going to be better than which other player, right? So you can just pick a player that you love tonight. Say it's Russell Westbrook. You can issue a challenge that Russell Westbrook will be better straight up than
Tim Hardaway,
Steph Curry. Tim Hardaway. Yeah, Doug will accept that challenge, it sounds like, because he just loves Tim Hardaway. I tried to pretend like I understood why, but I really don't. But really, yeah, you can issue a challenge. You pick a guy you think that your guy is going to outperform. You issue that challenge to the world. If someone accepts, it's game on. If not, no big deal. You get your money back. You can also just go through the app or on our website, actually. There's a widget where you can see real life challenges that you can X out or press the green check mark on. It's a great way to get yourself sucked back into the No Halftime app while you're trying to work. So check them out, nohalftime.com. Again, promo code DFSR. We'll get you that 50% bonus up to $50.
All right, let's get into the 8 o'clock games. Russell Westbrook and the Thunder head into Minnesota. Looks like Jimmy Butler is going to play after getting scratched with sickness and then sitting out the game after. So I think we could probably take the Shabazz Muhammad train off the table, which is fine by me, because I'm not a guy that I really loved playing on a night-to-night basis. It's just the way he is sort of made up. Now, Westbrook is a guy I thought we were buying very low on last time around. He was 10-5 on FanDuel.
We got paid some.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody played him. And it was just another scenario where the new world order with FanDuel this year is it's going to work both ways, right? And there are going to be times where we can take advantage of it. The pricing algorithm is clearly moving players faster, right? Like, it's clearly moving player, and that we've noticed it more on players on the way up, right? Like, where we've been buying low on a guy, and then one game later, Jaylen Brown's like, 2,000 more or something like that, or Jason Tatum has seen huge price increases, or some of these point guard plays. But what I'm realizing too is it's working the other way as well. Two sort of middling games for a guy like Westbrook, and now all of a sudden a guy who averaged over $12,000 in terms of FanDuel salary last year was 10-5, right?
Uh-huh.
And when you looked at Westbrook's game log, what you could see was he wasn't so different. He was doing – so it would be one thing if you saw Westbrook's, like, rebounding completely dip, right? Like, because he's got these two new guys on the team and that's not happening. Or if you saw the assists. The problem was – all the numbers had kind of been there on individual games and had never really put it together into like the old Westbrook, into the Westbrook like triple double. He does it last game against Indiana. He was one of the plays of the night. Now the price is up a little bit here, or it's not a little bit. It's up now 10% back the other way. Is he still in play against Minnesota? Against a Minnesota team that's clearly better than Indiana, but I don't know, not like light. They've been pretty bad on defense.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing with Westbrook is it doesn't really matter who his teammates are. He's just going to keep doing the same things. And I think actually more competent offensive teammates there. We're seeing a potential sustainable increase on the assists. I mean, the 13 assists so far seem utterly sustainable to me. And it's actually kind of nice because neither George nor Melo really rebounds their position particularly well. So I think that, all the things that Westbrook does, he can just keep doing those. And yeah, I think he's still too cheap. I think he's more like a $12,000 player, and that $500 really adds up. And whatever, Minnesota, who's going to cover this guy? There's like three guys in the league that can actually keep pace with him, and none of them happen to be on the Minnesota Timberwolves right now.
Timberwolves sneaky bad on defense this year. They rank last in defensive efficiency by a lot. Like their defense,
yeah, thanks a lot, Tim.
Their defensive efficiency is 114. The next closest or the next lowest is Indiana at 110. I mean, that's a pretty big gap for how bad they've been on defense. Now, missing two games out of Butler is going to do that because he's an elite defender, and the move from him to Muhammad is going to just cause problems really probably all the way down the chain. So I'm not like willing to read that much into it. That being said, still being dead last means you have other defensive issues as well. So
Butler doesn't bring you from dead last to second.
No,
right?
No, it's going to like make you like a better than like, I don't know, New Orleans or something like that, according to this list.
Just simply a bottom 10.
Right. And so I like the matchup here in what should be a pretty high scoring game. Other guys, Paul George was absolutely awful in his return, the revenge game he had, quote unquote revenge game he had against Indiana. He fouled out, basically played no minutes. Melo was pretty good that game.
It was a total
anything y'all two like on OKC?
Not super like, I don't think. I mean, I think, Melo is a tolerable play. I think all the other guys, like George, you can't play him. Who knows how that's going to shake out. And then Adams and Robertson are just odd men out. Nah, there's nothing else there for me.
Yeah, Adams has put up a few stats here in the past, though. I'm willing to just take that the most of the production is going to come on the Westbrook side, and I'm with you that we're still buying pretty low. Minnesota, like you said, are going to get Butler back. The game's supposed to be close, and they're supposed to put up points. I don't know. I think I will. The wait and see approach. I think I'm still willing. At least at these prices, need to see a few more games of like where the Wiggins Butler Towns thing kind of plays out. Antique plays out in the long term because. If we were like in a Denver situation with them where we were buying low, I think I'd take the risk. Like, you know, we were kind of buying low, I thought, on Jimmy Butler last time around until he got scratched. I still think we're in that kind of category on the Timberwolves, though I might be wrong. Do you think you want to see a little bit more out of the Timberwolves before you start buying on their prices?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're all just kind of a cut above too expensive. And the kind of uncertainty around Jimmy Butler just makes it a little bit, you know, it could go both ways, right? Like, you know, with the illness situation, he could come back and be totally fine, or he could come back and kind of just be a drag on the offense. Either way, like, I'm not going to play Butler, so for starters, but around him, like, the uncertainty around such a high usage ball dominant player creates, I think, a little bit too uncertainty, and the pricing, you know, not being, there's no, I don't see any glaring inefficiencies here or anything. So
pause real quick. He's 7,000 on DraftKings, and this is kind of where we had him. Yeah, so he's seven. I know he's 8,600 on FanDuel, and I think that's pretty much out of the question. But 7,000 on DraftKings, does that change your mind? That's venturing into like just like the kind of the upper middle tier. I just want to say
he's 100%. I don't, because like we got him scratched. He's missed two games. Like, that's like the kind of illness that it's more than just the NBA flu at that point. And so like if he's like deeply dehydrated or could come back in and play 30 minutes, like I just want more information. Again, even on a smaller slate like this, I think basketball in so many cases comes down to mitigating risk. And there's at a point where you can become overcautious about stuff like that. Like, you know, say Tim Hardaway, maybe you think like actually he did forget how to shoot. I don't think that's like a real risk to me, but in terms of just raw playing time and time you're on the court and what you do with that time on the court, that's the area I'm looking to take as few risks as possible. And I think, you know, you spelled that out very well earlier in the podcast, and now I don't even remember the specific player we were discussing. Kaminsky, you know. I get the Butler can get cheap, but I don't want to just make excuses that force myself to play him because he's too cheap or whatever, but then he plays 31 minutes because he's sick, you know. So I just need to hear, and because illness just goes away too. It's not like the hamstring injury. This illness is not going to be bothering him 2 weeks from now, unless it's like mono. He's been kissing, you know, people behind the bleachers or something.
Well, he's been kissing Juan Hernan Gomez because Juan Hernan Gomez is out for 4 weeks with mono. So maybe if you've been kissing Juancho behind the scenes, then maybe he does have mono. But otherwise, all right, let's move on. 10:30 game. Washington goes in the Golden State. You know, Wizards coming off just what it was an absolutely just. I thought this was going to be such a fun game to watch, like a high-paced kind of Lonzo Ball versus John Wall matchup, and ends up going to overtime where both teams just struggled to even score 100 points. It was really, really, really bad. All that being said, now that Washington goes in to play the Warriors, Warriors are minus 11 favorites. Let's start with Washington side. You know, they're underdogs here, but this is potentially a pace-up matchup, and it's also supposed to be a very high-scoring game if they're able to stay in it. How do you view guys, like, basically just the entire starting five? They did start Oubre, even with Jason Smith back, the Kat Kelly Oubre in the lineup. I feel like they'll probably keep him in the lineup here as well because I suspect he matches up a little bit better in terms of, like, just being able to run with the Warriors. How do you like the Wizards side of the ball?
Yeah, the Wizards are interesting because, like, almost to a player that's in the starting lineup right now, they've averaged they've averaged good fantasy production on their current price, right? Like, you know, some of them had not so great games against the Lakers, like Otto Porter comes to mind. But if you just look at them on balance and look at what they've done over the course of the season, you would probably just take all of the Wizards starters average production every night pretty much, you know. And so for that, then we're just kind of looking at matchup if we think sort of as a team they're underpriced. And you know, the Warriors are presenting a level of weird game script that most teams simply don't present, because not only are they able to blow you out, they're also able to just make it so anyone who can't shoot threes on your teams can't play. And so guys like Gortat will be at additional risk for that this game. Maybe Oubre to some extent. I think Porter, you know, still shoots pretty well for the position and is probably part of the plan regardless. But just be prepared for a weird game. And I think in situations like that, I am doing my best to try and only play these guys in big tournaments. I would be willing to play them in cash, I think, especially guys like Porter who are very cheap. But I think in the meantime, I'm probably going to do my best to avoid putting too many eggs in the Wizards basket here.
Yeah, I'm probably with you there too. They're probably pretty fairly priced. The wall has come down to 9,700 on FanDuel. That's not anytime you're buying. I don't know. Wall at under 10,000, I think, is like sort of at that breaking point. I can see people playing Curry at 9,500. Curry does not really, is not a guy that our system is usually going to check in on, just in terms of, just because he doesn't do a lot of the other stuff you need to do. Like, he doesn't rebound all that much. The assists are clearly there.
But he's also just a public player. You know, like, I think he gets, FanDuel definitely incorporates ownership percentage into your price. And Curry's not sneaking up on anyone, you know, like, he's always going to be probably 5% more owned than he should be. And that just makes him oftentimes fairly priced. Although he's been okay on this price so far this year.
Well, he's been shooting the lights out. That's why. Like, he just needs to continue scoring. This is the only reason I don't like. Look, he's the best shooter in basketball, so don't get me wrong. But his fantasy production is so scoring dependent, as opposed to some of the other guys, even like Wall, that like are going to chip in a lot in the assists and probably some more defensive stuff as well. So at the same price, I'd still prefer playing Wall over Curry. I think I'd probably be in the minority there because I think people like playing Curry more. But that's just kind of how I. That's kind of how it's like me with running quarterbacks. I just kind of trend toward guys that I think that there's many ways that they can keep their floor high, and Curry just doesn't strike me as that guy. Durant, I think Durant is still too cheap. We played Durant almost every single game that he's played so far this year. He's 10,000. I know he's coming off two games where he didn't really completely get there on price. One was against a very slow Dallas team, and the other was against a Toronto game that they kind of had to match up things, and they sort of went a couple different ways on offense. I love Durant in this matchup, especially on FanDuel. I think that we'll end up probably seeing him maybe in all of our lineups, like just at 10,000. I think when you can buy Durant in a nice pace game at 10,000, I think it's just it's not something you want to overlook. All right, final game, 10:30 game. Toronto goes in to face the Lakers. What do we do with Kyle Lowry, dude? He's got a great matchup, and he's been terrible. Like, what is this? What do you think the story here is on Lowry? He's 7,500 on FanDuel. It took him 38 minutes last game against Golden State to still kind of sneak up toward 5X on FanDuel. But this is the Lakers. I want to kind of play him a lot, and I also am totally just like a little.
I think we take a three-game sample, in kind of middling matchups, and then another middling matchup that he performed on a $7,500 price tag. I think that, you know, if you're betting against Lowry at this price, you're basically just saying that he's a different player now, and he might be, but you would probably need more information than I have to make a claim like that, because we only have four games so far this season, and what we know is that we have a long track record of him being more like an $8,300 player, and you know, kind of a unanimous play at it as an $8,300 player in matchups like this. And so I think he's totally playable against the Lakers at this price. I think we want to be very careful not to get carried away on the first three games of the season. And what would have amounted to, like, if those other games were fine, we would have been very happy with last night's result. So I think he's very playable. I don't think you need to force it, by the way. I don't think it's like so cheap. He's not 6,000 where you just have to do it. But if he winds up in your cash game, GPP, whatever kind of lineup, totally playable.
Yeah, the Lowry thing is similar to Hardaway, right? Like, his per-minute shots are right in line with where he was last season. And his per-minute rebounding is actually up. And the assists, the per-minute assists are up. Per-minute rebounding is right in line. And he's just shooting 38% from the field, and he's a 42% shooter for his career. And he's shooting 27% from three, and he's a 36% shooter, and actually better over the last couple of years than he has been in the past. So he's actually probably more like a 39% three-point shooter, and he's shooting 28%. That's it. You buy at these prices. Nothing else is different about them, except that he just has not been able to get the shots down. So $7,500 to me is a fantastic deal, and it's actually the exact guy that you want to stack in a high pace game against the Lakers, who still stink on defense. Other guys like DeRozan, I think, is fine. It looks like Lucas Nogueira is going to sit. I'm not sure. That could mean Poeltl starts. I'm not completely positive. We won't have. He's been playing minutes. He's been fine. But he's just like actually not cheap. Lakers side of the ball, they're doing a lot of the same things that they've done in the past with their minutes, except that now they have like a shiny new toy in Lonzo Ball that they seem willing to play a lot. Where do you kind of slot Ball in? He's 7,000 on both sites, I believe. Yeah, 7,400 on FanDuel, and I believe he's 71 on DraftKings. I'll look. But, you know, where do you see Ball? Like, he's been like,
he's like a better rebounding, worse scoring John Wall in my mind. Like, he just contributes across the board. I think he's excellent. I love the 12-9-9 stat line for a rookie playing four games. Like, that's just amazing, kind of. And it would be better if he hadn't played just 29 minutes in their opener against the Clippers and just generally sucked. I think Ball's great. I think he'll be more expensive than this in the future. I think Toronto's not usually the matchup where you want to take a shot on guys, just because, you know, they have a pretty, you know, whatever they've done so far this season, they do have a sustained track record of playing pretty slowly and playing very relatively tough defense. I know it hasn't worked out completely so far that way this year, but keep in mind that for stats like pace and stuff like that, the fact that they've played, you know, even just one game against Golden State can throw that off completely through a four-game sample. So I do like Ball. I don't know that it's where I'll wind up for cash games in this particular matchup, but say he goes out there and has another like 34, 35 fantasy point game, and then we get him in a good matchup sometime soon, I'd be very interested.
Yeah, I think there's a strong case that we're buying low on him. He's really shot really poorly, and I don't think he was ever expected to be a very good shooter, but he's definitely not, doesn't project to be a 31% field goal shooter, especially how much he can get to the rim. So, and he shot over 10 in the last two games from three, and that's just probably not likely to continue either. I think that based on the rest of his rate stats, the assists and rebounds, which are, and like you said, like the hustle stats are there for him completely, right? Like the, and guys that know a lot more about basketball than I do, like the guys that really study this stuff, love Lonzo Ball. Like they think that he is going to be just phenomenal for a lot of these reasons, and especially if the shooting can work out. So I think we could see him settle like in the $8,500 range pretty easily if the shooting kind of rounds out. Rest of the Lakers, I mean, Ingram has seen minutes. They've kind of been doing their bad player carousel shuffle as they try to figure out, you know, see who Lonzo can play with and then not really be still not that incentivized to win. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by really good friends over at Lineup Lab. It's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. Buddy, I could talk about basketball all day, but alas, other things to do.
Notice that.
Yeah, no, man, I could do a solo pod probably for like an hour and a half, I think, and just kind of talk about basketball. It's how much I love it. All right, we'll be back again next week, next Tuesday, talking more NBA. Buddy, enjoy your Friday night.
See you.